Hello, and welcome to Rage Game Network Podcast. This is Ben, coming at y'all with a special solo episode today. Sarah and Andy are still getting things ready for the new place, and I know Pretty Boy Chris has been cranking out some great episodes. I wanted to jump into the mix and give y'all some more games to check out, as well as some other news on the Yu-Gi-Oh! Card game and a couple of other media recommendations. So before we get into our game reviews today, got a couple of non-gaming media recommendations for all of y'all. I realize we've got a number of fans and who you have varied interests, whether that be music, movies, games, anime. So I wanted to share a couple of things outside of our normal gaming content for y'all to check out as some personal recommendations from some personal friends of mine. First off, any of my hip-hop and rap fans out there, my boy in the Rochester, Africa, has just dropped his first EP, Life is Grand, that is streaming now on Spotify. Go give him a listen if you are a fan of hip-hop and rap. He's been working really hard on this, and I know he's already got tracks for his next release waiting in the wings. For all of my book reading fans, whether you're a romance, history, crime drama, or maybe interested in a little bit of smut, give a check out to the Half-Baked Book Club. Lana and Dylan do regular episodes of this podcast, reviewing books they've read and inviting you to join the conversation on those, along with their daily dose of pop culture news and discussions on favorite shows and movies. Feel free to check them out all the places that you can find us, Rage Game Network, on Anchor or Spotify. And for all of my anime fans out there, you know the fall season is lit. I've been thoroughly enjoying the latest season of My Hero Academia, coming out weekly with those simulcast and the 1 week or 2 week or so delay for the dub episodes. And we've got the last part of JoJo's Stone Ocean coming to us in a couple weeks. And I've loved the first two-thirds of that. So that's what I've been up to when I've not been gaming. But I've been doing plenty of gaming, believe me, because this fall has been great for games. Speaking of which, let's get into our first review. Released in October 2021, Voice of Cards, The Isle Dragon Roars is the first in a trilogy from Square Enix and Aleem, both of whom are known for making some great RPGs, and I have thoroughly enjoyed my time playing Voice of Cards so far. This is a little bit cheaper than your standard price point of $59.99. This is coming to you for $29.99, which is a great value for a solid RPG. I found this a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month or so now, as recommended for lesser-known RPGs, and it was specifically noted as a great choice for those of you who are fans of tabletop roleplay games. You know me, as a several-year-long DM and player of Dungeons & Dragons, I was hooked just from that. So, this is your classic story of a ragtag group of adventurers seeking to slay a dragon plaguing their land, and the growth of their friendship along the way as they face monsters, mankind, and discover treasure. Very basic. We've been doing this story since the beginning of role-playing games. Can't go wrong with that. Now, what makes this great for tabletop fans is its unique graphics. You've got this hand-drawn art style, similar to the artwork for Bravely Default in its character concept art, or some of the promotional art for the early Final Fantasy games in what you might get in the concept art of drawings. And it's not 3D. So you've got these hand-drawn elements, and they're all presented on cards, as if you're playing a tabletop game. The artwork is absolutely gorgeous. You get a chance to view them in full in some of the menus. But in your gameplay, your overworld map looks just like a table with cards laid out in rows. You move a little player piece, and it flips the cards over to depict the landscape. In battle, you're giving this beautiful candlelit table with your three characters on one side, and then across from you, the enemy combatant cards. And then off to the side, you've got a little box of gems, and those gems are going to act as your mana for the specialty moves and magic throughout the battles. So it's a really cool, unique setup. Now, with that in mind, the graphics would have been solid going back to like a PS2 era. So this is not 3D. It's all 2D hand-drawn. So, you know, you could have gotten away with this being an older game. So if you're looking for graphics as your top tier, like, oh my gosh, the brand new Final Fantasies, those graphics, that's not what you're getting here. You're getting a unique experience for that tabletop fan. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt that, you know, this isn't the mind-blowing graphics of a AAA game, but it's very stylized. And also to reiterate, this is not a card battle system. It's a traditional turn-based RPG just with those stylized graphics. Picture your early Final Fantasy 1, 2, and 3, but depicted with elements of D&D and Munchkin. So I really enjoyed that. It's fun. Nice casual RPG. It is not the hardcore RPG that you're getting from some of these $60, 100-hour games. So it's a much more casual and fun experience with that. The music in this game is absolutely fantastic. It can be subtle when needed, decently dramatic. The voice acting is very minimal. In a D&D fashion, you have a single narrator doing your entire gameplay. It's almost kind of like having your dad read Lord of the Rings to you. I really enjoy it. There's also a cool little mini game that's somewhere between poker meets Go Fish, with some extra mechanics tossed in there that helps both increase the skill and luck factors of the game. It doesn't seem to net you anything during the main game, but you can play local multiplayer up to four people for that minigame if that's something you're interested in to fill some time when you've got friends over. Overall, there's not a lot of replay value outside of that minigame, but if you enjoy it, there are two sequels, both of which were released this year, one in February, one in September. I think it's great if you're a fan of tabletop RPGs or you're just looking to fill that old school RPG niche. This is a unique game to give it a shot. Overall, I give that a 6 out of 10. It's a fun game, so give it a check out. My next review for you today is the brand new Sonic Frontiers. As of recording, this came out maybe about a week and a half ago, and I'm going to try to be as spoiler-free as possible here. So, as we all know, the Sonic franchise has a mixed bag of games in the 3D era, and this is coming off the heels of a pretty poorly received Sonic Forces and some mixed reviews of the enhanced re-release of Sonic Colors. Now, I enjoyed both of those games, but they were very short for the $60 price tag, and each had their own issues in terms of story and buggy gameplay, which has plagued the Sonic franchise in all of its 3D titles. Sonic Frontier seems to have learned a lot from those. It does still have its own handful of problems, but it is a running dash forward for the series. before we get into the actual view, I do have a minor complaint about the pre-order for this game. So if you pre-ordered this game for physical copy at Best Buy or GameStop, your pre-order bonus was a steelbook case, which is great collector's item. The problem is they did not do a version specific to the Switch. So if you ordered it from the Switch, your steelbook is still a disc case like it would be for the PlayStation and Xbox releases, which is kind of silly given that the Switch has a tiny little cartridge. The GameStop one does look absolutely beautiful. The Best Buy one is kind of bland. But if you didn't pre-order it, that's not really a problem. If you're a collector looking to pick it up online from a reseller or on eBay, just note that if you have Switch games, it will not fit a Switch game. That's minor, but let's get into the game itself. So, in terms of story, this is probably one of the best stories for a mainline Sonic game in quite a while. It nicely adds to the lore of the Sonic canon, with ties to other games established in the series, as well as helps give some history to the mystery of the Chaos Emeralds. Quick spoiler-free synopsis is that Eggman finds a remote chain of islands with some remains of an ancient alien technology civilization, seeks to use it for his own nefarious means, and he messes up. He fucks up. You know, we all know in any game, don't mess with that alien technology. It's going to be a bad day for you, no matter if you are as smart as Eggman or not. Around the same time, Sonic's friends are seeking the Chaos Emeralds that have been drawn to this mysterious set of islands. They crash land, and then what follows is a journey to save Sonic's friends and uncover the mysteries of this ancient civilization. You know, pretty standard for a Sonic game, nothing too out of the norm. There's a new character, Sage, in the game, who's absolutely fantastic addition to the cast of characters. There's not as many of the Sonic pals that have been added over the years. You've just got Tails, Knuckles, and Amy, Eggman, and then this new character, Sage, kind of tied into the main story. You do get Big the Cat in a fishing minigame, which some people will love or hate. I know for many people that was their least favorite part of the original Sonic Adventure, but, you know, overall we don't have as huge a cast in this, but you don't need it. Your graphics, absolutely solid all the way around. This is absolutely beautiful. It's not as bright as Sonic Colors, but it's not as, like, edgelord as Sonic Forces. It definitely has some kind of Breath of the Wild Pokemon Sword and Shield feels to it. It's does have a little bit drop in quality on the Switch. Again, if you have a Switch, you know this, that the games are going to be a little bit lower quality than ones that come out on the other systems. So the Switch right now is going to run this game at 720p, 30 frames per second. Not ideal, but still looks clean. Your Xbox, PlayStation, Steam, depending on what your screen will produce, you can get it at 4K 30fps or 1080 60fps. So both really good. It looks beautiful even on the Switch. I got it for the Switch. It looks great on my TV. Obviously, the handheld's a little bit lower quality, but that's to be expected. Also, you figure, you know, the Switch has been out for 6 years at this point, compared to the about 2.5-3 that the PS5's been out. So the fact that it can still contend is pretty solid. Now, soundtrack is probably one of the highlights of every Sonic game, and for a good part of that, this does not disappoint. You've got seven great tracks that making up the opening theme, main theme, your boss themes and the ending themes. You've got a mix of heavy rock and some melodic pop punk. All of them are really good. And those are capped by the main theme called Dear Father, which is this beautiful melodic, like, anime style track. Like, I feel like it should have been the closing to some super deeply emotional anime. It will hit you in the gut if you listen to the lyrics, as well as see that with some of the cutscenes with that new Sage character. As for the rest of it, your overworld and stage themes, they don't quite measure up to that level. Like many of the new modern Sonic games, they are relatively generic in that the rest of those themes kind of listen like a Sonic-themed lo-fi trance beat channel on YouTube. But overall, you've got some nice piano tracks, you've got some house trance, and a couple of songs towards the end of the game definitely give off some early Skrillex dubstep vibes, if that's your thing. But overall, you know, it's a Sonic game, you've got solid music. Now, let's get into the gameplay. Gameplay is probably one of the biggest things that can be hit and miss in a Sonic game. So, you've got Sonic as your only playable character in this game, and unlike Forces and Generations, it's only modern Sonic, no classic. This is also the first open-world Sonic, with a majority of the game taking place in this beautiful landscape that's full of grind rails, enemies, rings, even some really cool mini-bosses, and decent-sized boss battles in your overworld, which is great. Honestly, that's a nice breath of fresh air. Throughout the landscape, you've also got a handful of puzzles, and then from your overworld, you still jump into stages for sections of the game. And those are a mix of 2D, side-scrolling, and the front-facing speed stages that we've become accustomed to. You also have that fishing minigame. So, a lot of your puzzles and minigames throughout this, while they do help break up the main gameplay, some of them do feel like their difficulty and length are made extra in a way to pad the game for length, or to make it so you can't easily 100% the game on the first playthrough, which I'm not a huge fan of, but overall it is a longer game than most of the past two Sonic games, two or three. I've clocked in about 25 hours into it, and I'm not going to 100% the game. I might get like 80% of all the stuff. And that's pretty solid, since Forces and Colors were both easily completed in under 10 hours each. So, the game also adds a great battle mechanic in its open world to take care of enemies. It's really fun, it makes the bosses really unique and enjoyable, and I honestly wish we had had these battle mechanics back in the Sonic Adventure games, as this works so much better for 3D Sonic than what we've had so far. So, also, kind of backtracking on the minigames, while some of them are padding, the new fishing minigame, it takes a lot from the fishing game from Fire Emblem Three Houses, and actually playing that minigame makes your overall gameplay easier. This game does have a lot of collectibles in it. Now, a lot of people do hate collectibles, but these actually serve a purpose. You go around outside of your rings collecting. You have purple coins, which allow you to play the fishing minigame. You have keys that you unlock throughout the stages that allow you to get the Chaos Emeralds. And then you have gears, which allow you to unlock the stages to play for the keys. It is a bit much, but they're all easily collectible through your just normal battling of enemies and traversing. So, yes, it is a bit of a collectathon, but it doesn't feel as tedious as it sounds. But overall, the really shining moment for gameplay and feature additions is the abundance of Supersonic in this game. The first time, I think, ever we've had so much play of Supersonic during the main game, and I absolutely love it. I am here for it. Supersonic is honestly one of the best elements of the franchise, and we don't get enough of it. Except here. We get it, and it's great. In terms of your actual stages, they're scattered throughout the islands that you traverse in the open world. They're very repetitive. Also, the designs of the islands are very repetitive. There's a lot of reused elements in this game. When you get to your stages, they're a mix of those 3D and 2D stages. There's only 4 visual themes for them, though. It's really kind of lacking on that compared to the more expansive Sonic Colors that had, while they were all short, you did have a handful of worlds, each with their own unique theme to stages. These are all kind of in the theme of Generations, retreads of classic Sonic areas for this game. You've got a set of stages modeled after Green Hills from the original Sonic and the Sonic 4 game, one set from Chemical Plant from Sonic 2, one set based on Sky Sanctuary from the Sonic 3 and Sonic & Knuckles game, and lastly a cyberspace area, which is new to Frontiers, but definitely has elements from Speed Highway from Sonic Adventure 2 and the Broken World of Sonic Forces. They're cool, but they get repetitive. But overall, they're still solid. You've got those mix of those two gameplay styles in the stages. Some of them focus more on platforming, which means you've got more of this Mario-like skill than speed of Sonic, which means occasionally you do feel punished for going fast, and the wonky camera issues from all the Sonic games are still there from time to time, but overall, really solid. I think this is probably one of the better implementations of the two styles of play in stages that we've gotten, albeit with a lack of variety of themes here. Overall, this game learns a lot from previous entries. Really great. I think if they had been given a little bit more time to add some variety to level design and polishing some of the stuff, and giving some variety to the different islands that you traverse, because it definitely feels like maybe they should have had 3 islands and they expanded it to 5 for your maps as like a last minute decision. Feels a little off, but overall it's great. This is more of what we've wanted for Sonic since Sonic Adventure 2 came out, that they've kind of been pushing for Sonic Adventure 3, but Sega's not let them make it. And this is, I think, is the closest we've come to it. Overall, I'm giving this game a 7.5 out of 10. And if you're a fan of Sonic, and maybe you haven't played some in a while, and you want to try something new, go for it. If you are a diehard fan, you'll absolutely love this. So, those are my 2 reviews for the week. We're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to get into my thoughts on the brand new Pokemon Scarlet and Violet that dropped this weekend as of recording, and then also take a look at some of the new cards from the Yu-Gi-Oh! TCG and see what we've got coming up to look forward there. So sit tight, we'll be right back. And welcome back to Rage Game Network. So, we're going to take a look in this second half at the brand new Pokemon Scarlet and Violet games, as well as some latest releases for the Yu-Gi-Oh! Trading card game. So, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet just came out this weekend as of recording. I'm going to try to be as spoiler-free as possible, and these are just my first thoughts on the game, as well as some tips that I've seen and other discussion points that I've noticed and that people online are talking about. So, first off, my pre-order did not arrive on time. As of recording, it is Saturday morning, and I still don't have it. It's supposed to be out for delivery. Maybe I'll get it later tonight. I did, when I realized that it wasn't going to show up on time, go and pre-ordered it in the Switch store. So I have been able to play it a decent amount, but when I get that pre-order actually in, I will post some pictures of the specialty pins and stuff that you got for the pre-order bonus. So let's take a look at what this game has to offer. We'll look at the graphics, thoughts on the open world, new features, etc. So starting with the graphics of this game, the opening of this game looks great. The customization options, the menus, the opening kind of intro cutscene, absolutely beautiful. The graphics are decently improved from Sword and Shield and Legends. It has the brighter colors and smoothness of something like Let's Go, but more of the detail and quality that's equal to or better than Legends Arceus, which is good. When we were told for Sword and Shield that they cut Pokemon from the decks to focus on graphics, this is what we wanted. This is definitely improvement. Your overworld, your characters, Pokemon models all look really solid. Though I will say from my limited playtime and various reports online, there are plenty of graphical issues that are even worse than Sword and Shield's. I'll post some link in the notes from an article that Kotaku put out showing more of the egregious issues from some users on Twitter. But in my experience, it's really just small glitches when catching, some lag and frame rate issues in the overworld when there happens to be numerous NPCs around. There's also some camera glitches when entering and leaving buildings. Honestly, they're more noticeable in issues and bugs than Sword and Shield ever had. Sword and Shield had lower quality but less bugs outside of the lag when you had the internet turned on, but this has lag even when you don't, which is kind of frustrating. Again, these are all things that probably should have been addressed before launch, but don't look like they really affect the gameplay too much. So compared to even Sonic Frontiers that I just talked about, or something like Breath of the Wild, like, this has more than that. Or even, like, Legends Arceus didn't have some of these issues. Maybe it was a bit ambitious for them to put this and Legends out in the same calendar year, but overall it looks beautiful despite the bugs. Speaking of those other games, this is open-world non-linear play for the first time in a Pokemon game in proper. So you can do your gym challenges and other storyline elements in any order. Unfortunately, unlike a regular MMO or RPG, there's no sort of level scaling like you might find in something like Elder Scrolls or other things. So you can do it at any level, but just know you might get wrecked depending on where you go first. Or if you power level, you might find the game too easy. Polygon.com does have a nice listing of the most optimal order based on level scaling. If anyone's interested in that, again, I'm posting links to a lot of the things I'm talking about below. I will be using this kind of order. I'm not going to go through and list it for you here, because I don't want to spoil the types for all the gyms and stuff like that for you. But if that's something you're interested, you can check that out. There's also a handful of people online that are doing like walkthrough guides. So overall, you do have a good variety in this open world of Pokemon available to you right from the start of the game. Lots of great Pokemon available to you to start your team building from previous generations. There are a lot of Pokemon that got cut, just like we had in Sword and Shield, but I expect a number of them to be added in DLC like we got for Sword and Shield. One thing I will say about the open world, I do kind of wish there were traditional route numbers and roads that you could follow in this open world a little bit easier, as opposed to everything just being kind of open to you like the wild area from Sword and Shield. But you do have a map, both with a mini-map in the corner, as well as a map you can bring up. You can also set markers for destinations to keep yourself on track. So those are some nice additions. Speaking of which, let's talk about those new features. So we've got the new roaming battle and item collection. They send a Pokemon out and it will auto battle and collect things up on the ground. It's pretty good. It could use slightly better AI and speed. If you're on your ride Pokemon, you will outpace that very quickly and it'll just come back to you and not stay on it, meaning either you take the slower pace of walking or you don't do the auto battle feature. Could be better, but it is still pretty decent. Then you have TMs. TM changes are back to single use, which is kind of frustrating because we've had unlimited use TMs since Generation 5. You can still craft and buy new TMs using this kind of point system. It's a little bit better than what we had with the TRs in Sword and Shield, but it's still a step back in the fact that they are no longer unlimited use. The new sandwich and meal mechanic seems to combine the curry minigame from Sword and Shield with the O-Powers from Generation 6, which seems like a great addition. I think that'll be kind of fun. I haven't played with that yet, though. The Terra types and Terra raids, fun. They're definitely fun. I would have preferred Megas or Dynamax, but it makes for some interesting battles. I'll say that. You know, they've done some good stuff with new features here. Overall, solid additions. Now, let's talk about the actual Pokemon, because I feel like that's the biggest thing people care about. So, first off, your starters. You've got your three starters, Sprigatito, Quaxly, and Fuecoco, your cat, your duck, and your gator with a piece of craft singles on it. So, there's a YouTuber, Austin John Plays. He wanted to do a great breakdown of the design, stats, and final evolutions of those. If you don't want spoilers, I'm not going to go into it. I will link it below if you're interested in that. But just a quick overview. So Sprigatito, with like mini spoiler, goes into a grass dark type, which is a physical attack speed Pokemon. Fuecoco becomes a fire ghost, with stats leading to a bulky special attacker. Quaxly is a water fighting physical attacker with otherwise balanced stats. For my playthrough, I ended up going with Quaxly. It's not my favorite design of the three, but in terms of move pool and stats, I think it's the best choice. Sprigatito was my favorite design, but its final typing is not great. Also, there's some other cool grass Pokemon I do want to check out this generation. And please, Pokemon Company, let the next cats down four legs. I know it's been less than 48 hours, but I know somebody online already has some Meowscarada and Incineroar fanfiction, and I don't want to see that. Please, no. But what about the other new Pokemon? So, I'm not a huge fan of most of the new designs. I like the new cross-gen evolutions. I like that they're still doing that. I think Legends did a good take on that, and I think they've picked up on that here. Overall, I did pick out a solid idea of new Pokemon I want to try out on my team, but on the whole, this generation is one of my least favorite for new Pokemon designs. I don't think it's as bad as Generation 5, but it's not high up on my list. We did get some of the most new Pokemon that we've gotten in the game, which is great. Some of the new Pokemon, like Toadschool and Veluza, probably could have just been Paldean forms of Tentacool and Barrascuda. I'm not sure why they chose to make some Pokemon their own instead of being their own forms, because we did get Paldean forms of Tauros and Wooper, both of which look really cool. I'm going to be using the new Wooper on my team. Additionally, again, this is semi-spoiler, but some of this has been out for a bit ahead of time. We've got some new paradox Pokemon, which are essentially ancient or future forms of Pokemon, and they are version exclusive, ancient ones in Scarlet, future ones in Violet. Personally, I think the ancient ones look cooler than the future ones. The future ones look like Badniks from early Sonic games. Unfortunately, other than being evolutions of old Pokemon, they've made them into standalone Pokemon, and they gave them really bad names. So I guess they're kind of like this generation's version of the Ultra Beast from Sun and Moon, which is not a trend I wanted to see them continue. I mean, those were a cool concept, and implemented decently. It's just these paradox Pokemon, like the Ultra Beast, come so late in the story that you're really not going to get a chance to play with them unless you swap out Pokemon that you've been adventuring with for your journey, which is kind of disappointing. Again, we've got a lot of Pokemon cut, just like Sword and Shield, but I'm sure we're going to get them in DLC. So far, it doesn't look like any of the new Pokemon evolutions from Legends made the cut, or any of the new Pokemon, which I guess makes sense, being that they're super ancient. I kind of would have thought that something might have made its spot in maybe Scarlet somewhere, and then they do something different with Violet. But so far, it doesn't look like any of those made the cut. Also, interestingly enough, this is going to be super random, but the Toucanon line from Alola didn't make the cut in this game or in Gen 8, so those have not been released in any game outside of Alola. So, I don't know. I really liked it in Alola. Let's bring back Toucanon. Free Toucanon 2022. That is my slogan. So, how about the story for this? We've got a three-branch story, which is really nice. So you can take on the gym challenge, you can take on the evil team, or you can focus on the Pokedex and these new Titan Pokemons. So that's really cool. You get access to all of them right at the start, so you can kind of focus on which ones you want to do. I'm going to assume you're probably going to need to do some of all of them to fully advance the story. You get a couple of new rivals. So far, the only one that stuck out to me is your intro rival that we've seen in some of the promotional art. And you meet her right off, Nimona. I love her character design, personality, probably one of my favorite rivals in a long time. We'll see how the game goes on, how much I still agree with that. Your gym trials so far, seems like the pre-gym trial lines up similar to what we got in Sword and Shield, and then the leader battles feel more similar to the battles of the Kahunas in Sun and Moon. I will miss the grandeur of the Sword and Shield stadium battles, but this works for this region. They also have like little classes at the academy you can take, which seems to be a nice way of building up your NPCs at the school, as well as possibly getting some free items. It definitely gives me vibes of Fire Emblem Three Houses. So, if you've yet to buy the game and versions exclusive are something that matter to you, which they might, because we're most likely not getting access to Pokemon Home for these games until the spring, so your version exclusive might be a deciding factor if you've yet to pick them up. I'm going to go through just a super quick list of your exclusives for each game. So, Scarlet, you've got Scarlet and Violet both have their exclusive legendary box art ones. That's going to be standard. So, returning Pokemon that are exclusive to Scarlet, the Larvitar line, Stonejourner, Oranguru, Stunky line, Drifloom line, Hydreigon line, and Skrulp line. For Violet, your exclusive there are going to be the Salamence line, Ice Q, Passimian, the Gulpin line, the Mistrevue line, Dragapult line, and the Clauncher Clawitzer's line. So, nothing super special stands out for those. I guess the big one for a lot of people are going to be the Tyranitar and Hydreigon lines compared to Salamence and Dragapult. I think it could go either way. Like, I really like the Salamence line. I'm not super sold on the Dragapult line. I like the Hydreigon line and not really sold on the Tyranitar line. Personally, I went with Scarlet just for the version exclusive legendary, as well as the new fire type Amiraj and Ceruledge. I went with Scarlet for those, basically. So, if that's a deciding factor, there's a rundown on that for you. A couple of cool trivia things on Gen 9. This is the first generation in which the character's initial appearance changes between different versions of the game, being that if you're in Violet, your uniform is Violet, or if you're in Scarlet, it's this... I can't even say it's Scarlet. It's orange. Let's be honest. Scarlet, they messed up on those colors. And then it's also the first generation since Generation 5 to introduce over 100 new Pokemon, which is kind of cool. Also, oddly enough, this is the only generation in which there's no new flying or ground type moves introduced. Yeah, that's cool little fun facts for you. Your multiplayer looks kind of cool. I haven't tried it yet. From what I've seen, your host player is the one whose Pokemon show in the overworld for everyone, which is nice. I will say, though, from what it looks like, because that and your interactions with those are individual person specific, if you're playing with multiple people and a shiny comes up, only one person can get that shiny. Don't let your friends steal your shiny, and don't steal shinies from your friends. We're not those people. Just be mindful of that. Also, it doesn't look like you can directly trade in your multiplayer. You still have to go through the trade menu. Your battles don't become double battles. And if you or another player interacts with a NPC trainer or storyline events, the other people will not see that or be participating. So it's not full MMO, but it's better than Sword and Shield. Again, when I get into it, we'll see if it's a laggy mess like Sword and Shield was with multiplayer. But overall, it looks like it's going to be better than Sword and Shield, but not perfect. So overall, I think it's going to be a fun game. There's a ton of hours that I'll probably put into it, like Sword and Shield. You can definitely tell they learn things from the last set of main series games as well as Legends, but there's also a number of technical issues that might need some polishing and some elements that don't feel fully realized. But I think Pokemon fans have come to accept that. And overall, it still looks beautiful. It still plays really well. And I'm excited to get more into it. I'm hoping once my copies come today, I'll probably see if Sarah Andy, maybe Pretty Boy Chris, or Connor want to borrow my extra Switch Lite in one of the games, and hopefully we can get some of their thoughts on it next time we all get together. So, switching gears, Yu-Gi-Oh! TCG. We've got a bunch of new product to talk about. I'm going to try and get through all of this without making this too long of an episode. So, recent release, we had the Magnificent Mavens Holiday Box come out about 2 weeks ago. Retails for $24.99. Each box comes with 70 card sleeves featuring art from either Skyscraper, Witchcrafter, or Mayakashi archetypes, all of which are beautiful. There's 20 cards in each box, similar to like the Ghosts from the Past 2 set. They are all holos. And we've got some reprints here. We've got reprint of the Sky Striker archetype with some new support. So if you're looking to get into that deck, this is a perfect way to jump into it. Sword Soul also got a number of reprints to match the 10E Spirit reprints we got in Ghosts from the Past 2, making that deck easier to pick up. Neither of them are Tier 1 decks right now, but they're solidly in that Tier 2 Rogue category. So if you're interested in getting into the game with either of those decks, I would highly suggest that. We also got some great reprints of staples like Triple Tactics, Lightning Storm, Evenly Matched Skill Drain. But the biggest chase cards from this are the new Earth Fairy Monsters used by Ishizu Ishtar from the Battle City arc of the OG Duel Monsters Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime. These cards are really cool in helping archetypes such as Tyrelements, Lightsworn, and Shaddoll. These are all retrains of cards that we got back a number of years ago. So they're level 4 Earth Fairy Monsters that are retrains of some anime monsters originally released in the 2000 set Dark Crisis. They have powerful effects of sending cards to the graveyard and returning cards from the graveyard to the deck. Particularly, they've been used in the Tyrelements archetype, as well as the Naturia archetypes, and the competitive scene, with the latest build of these Ishizu Tyrelement decks dominating the competitive scene for Yu-Gi-Oh! Right now. Often they're taking up 60% or more of the top 8 deck slots at regional and YCS level events. There's a couple other decks that are still fighting to contend right now. Sprite, Fluanderese, Dragonlink, Exosisters, which is what I'm playing right now. If you're interested in a breakdown of some of these top decks from events, check out mcole40 on YouTube. I'll link him below. But overall, this Maven set is great for getting into the game with a couple of decent decks, as well as picking up some staples, or if you're already playing the Tyrelements or looking to play the Naturia archetype, pick up these new Ishizu cards. They're not super expensive, and they definitely build huge support for both of those archetypes. We also got another new set this month. Coming out this weekend is Battle of Legend Crystal Revenge. So this has some cool stuff in it as well. Probably not as impactful as Maven's, but still worth taking a look at. This has reprints of the core monsters for Blackwing archetype, which got some new support in the last core set of Darkwing Blast about a month ago. We also have ultra rare reprints of the Crystal Beasts, which we just got their deck again about a month and a half ago. So that's a nice balance because most of the Crystal Beasts only had common and super reprints. So now we get them in ultras. We also got the first printing of the Advanced Crystal Beasts, admittedly less good than the original Crystal Beasts, but they come in secret rares and they have cool art. But the biggest sellers for this set is we are getting a Starlight Rare set of Exodia. These cards, I think each piece is going for $300 plus right now on TCG Player, but it looks beautiful. So if you're a collector, that's what you're looking for in this set. We've also got a couple of new support cards. Clockwork Knight is a continuous spell for the Earth Machine deck. We've got Eon Shuffle for anyone playing Elemental Heroes with a focus on Neos and the Neospatians. We also get some new monsters that we've not previously gotten. We've got the Doodle Beasts, which are dinosaur monsters shown in the Arc V anime. And then we've got the G-Golem monsters from the Vrains anime. I really don't see any of these having a major effect on the current meta, but they're all pretty cool for collectors. The last piece of new Yu-Gi-Oh! Product we've got coming out, December 2nd, we've got the Dark World structure deck coming out. So, Dark Worlds were first released as an archetype in Elemental Energy back in 2005, which was one of the early sets for the Yu-Gi-Oh! GX era. I played this deck along with Gravekeepers when it first came out, 2005-2006. It's a really fun archetype to play. And this follows the trend of GX era archetypes getting new support this year. We've gotten new support for Heroes, we've gotten new support for Crystal Beasts, so I'm kind of excited for this. We've got 8 new support cards for the archetype in here, including 2 new boss monsters, and in addition to that, reprints of the popular Danger Monsters, which saw play both with variants of this deck over the past couple years, as well as use in the Tirelament strategy. Also, interestingly enough, this is the second Dark World Structure deck we'll be getting. We did get one back in 2011 called Gates of the Underworld. And this makes the Dark Worlds fall into a unique category, because other than the Ancient Gear archetype, they're the only archetype to specifically get more than one structure deck released, which is kind of cool. The Ancient Gears had Machine Revolt in 2007 and Machine Reactors in 2017. So this is going to be kind of interesting. It seems like they are taking some of these archetypes and giving them a 10-year anniversary reboot. I don't know what made them specifically choose these ones, but I think it's pretty cool. We've previously had specific monster types or boss monsters, such as Master Magician Endemon being focused in the Spellcaster Command and Order of Spellcasters decks, or we've had multiple dragon, warrior, or zombie theme structure decks, but those two are the only two actual archetypes to get their own structure decks twice. We did get a couple different Yugi and Kaiba character decks, but I don't know. I think this is interesting. Having the impact on the meta for Dark World will probably be a little bit more noticeable than Crystal Beast was, though the Crystal Beast did have some small impact at a couple of regionals across the United States, which is kind of cool. I don't think it'll have as much impact as the Albaz structure deck we got in April, but I think between those two structure decks still being on the shelves and this new one coming out, if you pick up three copies of any of them, or even say one to two copies of each of them, you've got a handful of staples and good cards to help get you started at a semi-competitive level, which is really cool. I'm interested to see where things are going to go competitively in the next couple months. Right now we're kind of in a tier zero format, with Tirelements being at the top dominating, and everything else kind of fighting to stay in the top 8, top 16 in events. But who knows, maybe some of these new sets and new releases will add some changes to that. So if you're interested in any of these things that I've talked about, as I've mentioned, links are going to be below. We'll catch you on the next episode of Rage Game Podcast. Hoping to get the rest of the gang together soon. So, with that, if you rage it, we game it. Bye.